You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Friday, July 29th, 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is our Fox GameSpots, Timur Hussein.
Hello, I'm here. I am happy to be here. Top of the morning. Let's get this shit.
Have you listened to the new Beyonce album? I know there's a hard left turn from Kendrick and Baby Keem.
I started listening to it and I got like three tracks in and I was like, it's not working for me.
Yeah?
It wasn't working for me. It was late night, so maybe I'll try again, but I've been listening to, I don't know, the sound was a bit weird for me. Like, it felt kind of like industrial electronic music a lot, and I was like, this is not vibing for me.
It's definitely not a nighttime at-home album.
No.
If you're listening to that at nighttime, you have to be at the club.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you have to be in a setting where your soul is not being broken.
Yeah, exactly. I've been listening, you know who I have been listening to?
Is that?
LMI. Do you know LMI?
LMI sounds familiar, but can you? Who is LMI?
English British singer songwriter, just incredible. I love her work so much. Yeah, right. She's so good. She did she released it in May. So I think it's called Heart on My Sleeve, an album. So good. So good. Her first album is just called LMI, and it's like so good. I love
it. When you said
so
LMI, in my head I was like L period M period I period.
No, Ella My.
I don't know if I've talked to you about this. Are you a Lupe person?
Oh yeah.
Have you listened to the latest album he dropped?
I started listening to it. I need to go back to it. It was fairly recently, right? It was like a couple weeks.
Yeah, it was like about a month ago. Okay. It's one that I listened to it the first time and I was like, oh, okay, it's fine, it's a fine Lupe album, and now I cannot stop listening to it. The more I listen to it, the more it grows on me, it becomes an earworm, and I'm like, I become fascinated by the things he's saying, because of course he's Lupe Fiasco.
Yeah,
he's a lyrical genius, there's layers to everything, and now I go back and I listen to songs and I'm like, oh, I didn't catch this bar, I didn't catch that bar. He has a whole song with like an Assassin's Creed scheme to it, where it's called Fish, even though it's spelled out as goatee, but it's like supposed to be a bit, right? Called Fish, and like he like references Assassin's Creed at the top of the verse, and as he goes to the verse, there are like little bars here and there. It's like, shit! All right, what are you referencing here? Like, there's a bar in there where he says, "Neuralink is now pirating all your fantasies," right? And he says that, I'm like, oh, okay, he's talking about like modern technology shit, but also like a cool reference to the Animus. Right.
Fantasies.
But then you think about it further and it's like Assassin's Creed 4 is a pirate in your fantasies, but also the way he says it, he's like pirate in your fantasies, and I'm like, goes off the chain.
That's good. I'm gonna go back and listen to it again. I've been like listening to Joey Badass's 2000 a bit. It's really good. I enjoy it.
Badass doesn't get enough credit. He's really good.
No, he's great. I really liked the pro era stuff that they did back in. He doesn't do much pro era stuff, but I got into Joey Badass and pro era through Capital Steez, who sadly passed away. Mm-hmm. Joey Badass underrated, I think. Yeah. Real good album.
Speaking of Capital Steez, there's a song on there called Survivor's Guilt that might be my song of the year. It is an incredible, if you're a fan of rap, if you're a fan of storytelling in rap, it is an incredible song with incredible production and incredible storytelling. But Tam, enough about rap music. Let's talk about video games, because today's stories include PlayStation sales decline, the Nier community getting duped, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when you get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kind of Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, at patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, the silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, Greg's new WWE show, This Is Awesome, is live on Peacock right now, and fame has gone to his head, and he is demanding people that you go and tweet or Instagram a picture of This Is Awesome on your screen, and then tag at WWE and tell them at Game Over Greggy, put your butt in the seat. Let me tell you, he wrote this.
Please, please just do it.
Just do it, because if you don't do it, he's going
to let you forget it, yeah.
Because I'm the host that is supposed to communicate this to you guys, and if you guys don't do this, the hellfire will rain down on me, and I do not want Greg Miller's hellfire. So please tweet at WWE with a picture of This Is Awesome on your screen, tag Game Over Greggy so he sees it, and tell them that he put your butt in the seat. Dear God, please. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Fargo Brady, Gordon McGuire, and Al Trisman. Today we're brought to you by MeUndies and Chime, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 8 stories today.
Baker's Dozen.
Starting with our number one. Tam, let's talk numbers. PlayStation is reporting a sales decline. I'm pulling from Tom Warren at The Verge. Sony has cut its annual profit outlook, warning of weaker PlayStation game sales. The forecast comes as Sony revealed it shipped 2.4 million PlayStation 5 consoles in its recent quarter, up only 4% from the 2.3 million shipped during the same period last year. PS5 lifetime shipments have now reached 21.7 million. While hardware sales are slightly up year over year, software sales have plummeted 26%. In an investor call, Sony blamed the game slump on a lack of big PlayStation titles this year compared to 2021, and less time spent playing games in general. Backed up by monthly active PlayStation Network users dropping 3% to 102 million. Sony released its exclusive Gran Turismo 7 and Horizon Forbidden West titles earlier this year, but Elden Ring arrived at the same time across multiple platforms and stole the limelight. Reuters reports that Sony has now revised its annual profit forecast down 16% for its gaming business, as it anticipates another fall in game sales next quarter, alongside costs associated with its recent $3.7 billion Bungie acquisition. Sony previously forecast 18 million PlayStation 5 shipments for its 2022 financial year, and the company hasn't revised those estimates yet. Quote, supply has not been sufficient. Demand has not gone down. We really need to meet the demand. That is the important thing to do, said Sony CFO Hiroki Totoki in an investor call today. Tam, we're seeing a slight drop in sales for PlayStation. Does that shock you?
No, not at all. As said in the actual quote there, supply has not been sufficient. Demand has not gone down. It is the reality of the situation right now with component and parts issues. It is bound to happen, right? Like, it's people want the thing. Sony cannot give them the thing, so the thing is going to sell less. It makes perfect sense. The interesting thing is going to be how well they pivot away from it. It's kind of out of their hands. I know a lot of companies are trying to figure out alternate ways to get around these component issues by re-engineering hardware or trying to find new sources of it. We'll wait to see whether Sony is able to do that and whether it is worth their investment to put in that kind of stuff or to ride it out. But yeah, it's kind of like a tricky time for them because they are reporting sales down, decline down, and availability is not high. And we're rapidly approaching the holiday season where a lot of their biggest sales numbers are often counted and made. Like, it's going to be a weird one if they go into the Christmas season without the ability to supply the demand. And it's different from, you know, many years ago, where the last time I can think of this happening was the Wii, where everyone wanted that thing. It was the thing to buy at a Christmas period. the thing with them back then was Nintendo could not make them fast enough. They were trying. Mm. They were shoving those things out of the door constantly. What we have now is people want the thing, and just Sony cannot meet it currently. So it'll be interesting to see how this kind of unfolds over the next couple months.
Yeah, I'm sure, and I'm sure folks over there at Sony, higher ups over there at Sony, look at God of War Ragnarok and they're like, thank God this is coming in November, at least for software sales, right? Because I think one of the big factors here in the sales report is the fact that the last quarter for PlayStation and for video games in general, I'd say, has been down. You know, you look at the last quarter of the previous fiscal year, which is January through March, and it was banger after banger after banger, right? You're talking about Dying Light 2, you're talking about Pokemon Legends Arceus, you're talking about Elden Ring, Horizon Forbidden West, you're talking about Sifu, you're talking about a whole bunch of Gran Turismo in March, and March had Tiny Tina as well, right? There's so many big games that came out in that period. And then as soon as we hit April, it felt like there was a drought. And, you know, I on Kind of Funny, right, I called it the backlog season because there wasn't much coming out. And now, like, it seems as we're getting into the fall, you can kind of see where things are coming together a bit in terms of game releases. If for a PlayStation first party, you are talking about Last of Us Part 1, which is going to sell very well. That is it's a Last of Us game. It is a new gen title. And I know there's back and forth on whether it needs to exist, whether it costs too much, all that stuff. Regardless, that game is going to sell well because it is Last of Us. God of War Ragnarok is also going to sell that's going to sell amazingly because it is the next iteration in the God of War franchise. And if you look back, God of War 2018 sold really well as well, right? Like one of the few Sony IPs that have overtaken the like first 3 weeks sales, I want to say, over that was Spider-Man. And Spider-Man is one of the biggest IP in the world, right? And so God of War to kind of be right under that, you know, that is going to be big for PlayStation in terms of getting those sales back. And then it's going to fall on hardware to be available. And I think that's where the big challenge lies. Is hardware going to be available by this fall?
Yeah, and it's going to be bittersweet for them because they know that if their hardware was more freely available, the attach rate for God of War would have been pretty good. Like, they would have been able to move some consoles because, like we said, the first God of War in the rebooted series was a massive, massive deal, sold really well, critically acclaimed, reached mainstream kind of like discussion points, and is known as a thing that PlayStation has. So that of all games, that would be one of the games that people would be like, now's the time to buy and buy a PlayStation. And instead, what's happening is if they don't have the ability to supply that demand, it might frustrate people seeing that there's a new God of War available on consoles, on a PlayStation console that they cannot buy. And worst case scenario, pushes people to draw a line in the sand and be like, well, I'm not committing to this anymore again. If anything, it's like perhaps a better case being made for right now, making sure that PC games, PlayStation games are on PC day and date if they want to improve it. Performance.
And on that note too, I'm sure on a similar way of Sony execs being happy that God of War Ragnarok is coming out this fall, I'm sure they're also happy that, like, thank God we made the decision to make this current gen and previous gen. Like, thank God we're putting this on PS4 because you're not going to have that sales cap on that piece of software that is going to do so well for you. God of War Ragnarok, I think, is still going to go far in terms of selling PS5s, but we're still in a place where if PS5s are capped in terms of how many you can get out there and how many you can actually supply, then almost becomes a moot point. You know, it becomes more on the PS4 audience then to carry that through.
Yeah, you got to play that PS4 version, which I imagine is going to do exceptionally well on PS4 as well, just because there's a hell of a lot of PS4s out there. But, you know, from a Sony perspective, they would prefer if people were buying PlayStation 5s to go along with it. And also people who are interested in that game. Like, if I still had a PS4, I would be thinking now's the time to buy a PS5. And if I'm unable to buy a PS5, I'm begrudgingly playing it on a PS4. Like, you know, 100%. I'm like, fucking, yeah.
One thing I want to note too, right, on the question of what does this mean, right? Like, PlayStation is seeing sales declines. Is this a shock? Is this something to be surprised about? I want to give a shout out to Matt Piscatella on Twitter. Of course, Matt is part of the MPD group, and he tweeted this out, right? He says that higher prices in everyday spending categories like food and gas, return of experiential spending like travel, sports, and movies, lighter release slate of games, and continued supply constraints, and people wonder why gaming results are down compared to a year ago. Of course, gaming isn't doomed, but some correction after the pandemic-fueled gaming boom is very reasonable to expect and easily explainable in the results, which I 100% agree with, right? I think we saw gaming have such a rise in 2020, you know, starting at I want to say Animal Crossing, right? I think that was the big one where everybody was like, shit, everybody's playing this thing. Like, Animal Crossing is selling like hotcakes. People can't get enough of this thing. And then that led into a couple of years there of gaming interest booming because people were at home. People were not traveling. People had a lot of people had extra income to spend on things like technology, things like video games. Yeah, like video games skyrocketed. But now that things are evening out a little bit, right, at least more than things were in the last couple of years. Yeah, like people are now spending money in other places, and video games just aren't as hot in the last quarter as they have been in the last couple of years. And so this all aligns with what the landscape looks like right now.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. People are making, you know, they're making up for lost time and going out to restaurants and going to see concerts and buying anime box sets, which is the complete right thing to do, you know. It's not doom and gloom for gaming. It will swing back up once, you know, once games start releasing, big games start releasing again. And also people kind of, they settle in their spending again. Right now, it feels like people are on a bit of a high of spending on non-gaming things where, you know, social circles are once again forming and coming back together. And it's all about, you know, this FOMO right now. You don't want to be the person who's not out and about with your friend circle after, I don't know, a year, 2 years, whatever it may be. There's opportunity. I've seen people now traveling internationally more than ever in the last couple of years. So that's a big expenditure. And it's going to naturally calm down again once people feel a little more like things are, you know, satiating them in terms of socially. And then usual gaming spending will probably kind of resume, where it's not going to be over the top. It will be more considered and kind of like people will be buying more games because there are games out there.
Exactly. Let's hop into story number two. Nier fans have been hoodwinked. This is Chris Scolian at Video Games Chronicle. The mysterious new secret area that's been puzzling Nier Automata fans for the past month has been revealed to be an elaborate hoax created by a team of modders designed to show off their new modding tools. The hidden area was first discovered over a month ago when a Reddit user asked members of the Nier Automata Reddit why they were able to access the church when their friend couldn't. This was met with confusion as no such area was known to exist. In the past few days, though, the user has been posting a series of videos showing them going through an inaccessible door and into a twisted white corridor. Each video has confused the community more, with some speculating that the user was playing on version 1.0 of the game. Adding to the confusion was the fact that the modding scene for Nier wasn't believed to be that advanced, certainly not to the point of reintroducing old content into a new area while integrating it into the game. It has now been revealed, however, that the mystery was designed to show off exactly that, a new set of open-source modding tools that will allow the Nier community to create their own areas. A stream on the group's Twitch channel named Z34_Zinnia showed more footage of the hidden area on Friday before dissolving to a message explaining that it was a mod. Quote, "Everything we shared has been completely in-game. No editing was used," the message reads. Quote, "We have been loving all the discussions and theories. It has been an amazing journey," end quote. The mod appears to have been created by a team of three people. Devilous Revenge designed the map, Wolf_Wolf developed the Blender tools, and Raider B developed the scripting tools. Quote, "Over the following days, we'll be releasing the new Blender add-ons and scripting tools, completely open source," the message reads. "We have so much more in store for you." Tam, have you been following this saga?
I've been keeping an eye on it. I didn't expect it to go here. I think it's a great Russell, which I respect, but I don't know. I think this is going to piss a lot of people off more than people are excited by it. Because I get what you're going for here, but chances are you've got more Nier Automata fans watching and following this than you have actual modders in the community. So by doing this, you've impressed a few modders, but you've pissed off a whole lot of fans of that game.
Yeah, it's been so fascinating for the last week seeing people freak the fuck out trying to figure out what is going on. Kevin just had the video pulled up, and you want to pull it up again, Kevin. You know, like the original video that the person posted, right, was them in the, I forget what it's called, but like the white area, the white weird area, if you played Nier Automata.
Forgotten City? Is it?
Yeah, like the Forgotten City. That's a game that was really good last year also. Yeah. But it's him going up to, or them going up to the a wall, opening a door, and then going down a path that then leads into this really interesting spirally location that then leads to a church. And for me, as I was watching it, I was like, this is insane. I can't believe somebody found this what is this? And I've not been one of the people that has been like reading through the subreddit and has been theorizing. I as soon as I saw this, I was like, this is wild. I'm gonna sit back, let people solve this, and see what the final result is. And for the final result to be, oh yeah, here's our modding tools that we figured out. Like, this is cool, isn't it? It's like, yo, people, yes, just yesterday we're talking about, oh shit, they're gonna bring back Dragon Guard. This is a tease for Dragon Guard. Like, people were very excited about.
People are whiling constantly, man. People see one small thing and they're like, well, this can only mean this insane other thing that they've extrapolated out of it. It's like, what are you talking
about?
I mean,
this is, it's very similar to the Abandoned situation. Less, like, I think less with bad intent.
I mean, let's just say that all of the developers that worked on this are infinitely more capable and talented than anyone, than someone that worked on Abandoned. Let's just say that.
1000%. But it's similar in the way that I think the Abandoned ruse worked so well because people are taking that and putting it in the eyes of Hideo Kojima. And Hideo Kojima is a madman. And so you can see how that would happen, right? Where Hideo Kojima would be like, ooh, I'm going to reveal this low-key demo on the PlayStation Store and then call it this thing and then release it and then like have it be a big surprise. A lot of that links back to who Hideo Kojima is as a person. But then you think about who Yoko Taro is as a person. And it's very similar in terms of, oh yeah, this thing has not been found for the 5 years that this game has been out. Now somebody finds a hidden door and it seems to be hinting toward a Dragon Guard, what, 2, 3, whatever the next Dragon Guard iteration is.
Yeah,
I can see how people will come down on that, but yeah, it's like it's just a weird perfect storm of people going crazy seeing this thing. But you know, good on the modders for doing something cool.
It's fun. And like, as I think most people on the Reddit were like, well done, you got us. But yeah, I would be interested to see if there's anything made outside of the Copied City. Oh, it's called the Copied City. My brain just remembered it and said it. Yeah, there we go. But yeah, I'd be interested to see if there's anything made outside of the Copied City, because obviously, not to disparage what's been created here, but like, it feels almost like the creating stuff outside in the main world might be more trickier. This feels like it's almost like a modular bolt onto an area that's easy to kind of add stuff to. But I love the idea of people taking Nier Automata and making more around it, because that fan base is very, very into that game and they understand it, and I bet a cool team could come along and be like, we're gonna add some stuff to this game, man, and that could be very, very cool. And yeah, I don't know how likely it is we get another Nier game maybe for a while, but it could be something to tide people out. That would be pretty cool.
It would be pretty cool. And I tend to not be that big of a mod person, but I did, speaking of the Forgotten City, I played the Forgotten City last year and I fucking loved that game. And you know, that started off as a Skyrim mod, but they took the modding tools for that and turned it into this really cool detective mystery with time loop mechanics and all this stuff. Now that these modders have gotten this far with the tools for modding Nier Automata, I would love somebody to do that, right? Like, what cool stories can we tell with the Nier Automata engine and with the world that they have there? Because Nier Automata is a dope as hell game. I think the Nier world is really cool, and I would love to see people have share their own takes on what they can do with that fiction, what they can do with those characters, or even create something new in there.
Modders out here are just doing the most ridiculous things right now, and it is fascinating. Have you seen Nightfall, the Dark Souls mod?
No, what is it?
There's a group of modders that created a sequel to Dark Souls called Nightfall, which is like, it's so cool. It picks up literally where the original game ends, and like, you can see your character like going to make a decision, and you're like above them, and you drop down and you pick up with a whole new power set, new areas, new story. It's wild, man. But I love what modders are doing right now. So cool.
Hell yeah. Good on modders. And also, yeah, good on these near modders. You may have taken things a little bit too far. I guess the community may have taken things a little bit too far with how they read into this, but at least these are some cool tools, and it is not the Abandoned situation of, oh yeah, this is just a grift, right? At least you're getting something out of it, and so good on you for now. Let's hop into story number 3. We got a quick recap of that Annapurna showcase that happened yesterday. I'm pulling directly from Rebecca Valentine at IGN. In case you missed the show or want to remind yourself of that cool game you didn't catch the name of, here's everything we saw at the Annapurna Showcase. Thirsty Suitors got a new trailer, though we didn't get a release date this time around. We saw quite a bit of gameplay, and there's a free demo out now on Steam. Thirsty Suitors will release for PC, PlayStation, Switch, and Xbox Game Pass. Hindsight got a brand new trailer with a release date for the first time. Hindsight is a story-focused game going through a woman's life from birth to present day, where physical objects can become literal windows into the past. It's out on August 4th for iOS, Switch, and PC via Steam. A new project is coming from the creators of Kentucky Route Zero. Dino God Studio revealed Bounty Star, the morose tale of Graveyard Clem. It appears to be an Old West-styled shooter where the main character is a woman who pilots a cool mech. Bounty Star will be out sometime next year for PlayStation, PC via Steam, and Xbox Game Pass. Texas and Georgia-based studio Yarn Owl popped in for a segment to talk about the studio's founding and its drawing inspiration from A Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past. Outer Wilds is getting a 60 FPS update for Xbox Series X and S and PS5. The update is free, and it lands on September 15th. The Pathless, Maquette, and Solar Ash are all coming to new platforms this winter. What Remains of Edith Finch is getting a free next-gen update that's out now. German studio Third Shift appeared to talk about his formation and the creation of his upcoming game Forever Ago. It's a story-driven road trip adventure about an elderly man who embarks on a journey in his van, traveling across the different landscapes in North America and taking photos as he goes. It's unknown for now what platforms or when Forever Ago might release. If you're having a hard time trying to visualize what that game is, just think of something like Greg Miller would love. It is a Greg Miller-ass game. Flock Gathering Your Friends was up next, featuring colorful landscapes with cute little bugs and other animals fluttering around. It's coming to Xbox Game Pass, PC via Steam, and PlayStation at a later date. It's funny because as they're showing that game, I made the joke that, like, oh man, this game looks like it'd be called something like Hohokam or something like that. And then the very next game they showed was Hohokam, which is out now for Steam. Katamari Damacy and Wadham creator Keita Takahashi announced his new studio, Uvula. The developers of If Found are making a new game featuring anthropomorphic cats. And then finally, the show concluded with the reveal of a game from Great Ape Games called The Lost Wild. The Lost Wild appears to be some sort of survival horror game featuring dinosaurs. And I think that game looks very neat. Tim, mm-hmm. did you get to check out the Annapurna Showcase?
Yeah, I saw bits of it. I didn't watch it live because unfortunately I was busy. But yeah, there's some really cool stuff there. Like, I'm really interested in Thirsty Suitors. I want to play that game. It looks so weird. It's got like, every time I see it, I'm like, is this Persona? Is this a Scott Pilgrim? What is this game? And it looks really, really cool. But Annapurna are still putting out some, or selecting some really cool games to kind of push front and center. I'm excited by a bunch of it. I am kind of also excited about playing some games that I've already played again, like the Outer Wilds is getting that X60 FPS update for PS5 and Series X. Kind of want to play that a bit more. I might jump into it for the DLC as well. It's been a while since I played Edith Finch, so could be up for that as well. But yeah, there's also a lot of the new games that I was like interested in turned out to be like not a lot of gameplay to it, mostly just the developers of it being like, hello, we're making the name of this game. It's going to be a cool game. We hope you will be excited.
This game will come out someday. Yeah. And just them drinking coffee and like their cool ass looking hipster ass studio.
Yeah. But yeah.
I think we live reacted to this yesterday, and it's funny because the Annapurna Showcase they did last year, 2021, I loved and adored for their developer commentary. I thought they did a good job of making each of the devs have their moment and make it a thing where each reveal felt unique and different. Mm. And even if they didn't have a full game to show, the way that they showed the developers, I thought was pretty cool. This showcase, I felt, was like just a tiny step down from that previous one. I don't know exactly what it was for me that by the end of it, I did feel like, oh man, it was a lot of talking, and the talking didn't engage me as much as the talking did in that first one. Especially, and I think part of that might be the game variety. Like, a lot of the games seem like very Annapurna games here, where it is, here's a narrative about somebody in a broken home that Greg Miller is going to love, right? And one of the trailers literally had a broken home in it. They had a lot of those, but then they also had the Lost in Wilds, which engaged me. They had the I forget the name of the studio, but the Austin-based developer making the Link to the Past
games. Oh, okay, no.
Yeah, the Link. The well, which one was Great Ape Games? Because that one.
That is the Lost Wilds. That was the what do you call it? Dino Crisis looking game.
Yeah, the Lost in Wild. Yeah, that game looked cool. I'm talking about Yarn Owl. It was the Texas and Georgia based studio with the two dudes who are making the Zelda inspired thing. Like that engaged me as well. I think for me, it might have been a pacing thing. You know, I think if they grouped some of the games better, if they like got through some of the talkie portions a little bit quicker, maybe would have engaged my interest a little bit more. But the announcements, reading through them, I'm like, oh no, this is a banger. Like, it was a pretty good showcase. The game's coming to new platforms, I think is really exciting. What Remains of Edith Finch is a banger, and I think everybody should play that, especially for somebody who likes walking sims or narrative games. That is a really dope one. You know, games like Outer Wilds, which I still got to go back and finish Outer Wilds. I have booted it up like 8 different times, and I get halfway through every single time, finding different clues every single time, and for whatever reason, I lose interest. 60 FPS did intrigue me. I was like, oh shit, I could see myself getting more into it if it ran a little bit better.
Do you know the best way to play that game? And this sounds like I'm pissing about, but stream it. Yeah. Like, stream that game. Like, the community that comes around that game while you're streaming it as well is so cool, because they'll show up and they know that their interest is reliving the game through you, so they will never spoil it for you. They'll just gently push you in the right directions and they'll help you out. I streamed that game start to finish, and it was one of the best streaming experiences I've ever had. It's so much fun.
Awesome. That reminds me of one of the best streaming experiences I had was playing Bloodborne, and that was me during a winter break, logging on every day and playing, having Imran come on call. And I think you came on call too.
Yeah, a couple times.
And having people nudge me in the right direction, having chat talk about it, having Imran and you explore some of the lore bits that are going on. That shit was dope as fuck. Excuse me. And I really like that as an experience. And that's why even though I've tried out Outer Wilds so many times and I drop off every single time, I still want to push through it, because I do like the idea of it. I do like the premise of it. And the game loop, I do think it's something that it has things that I value in games. Like, I like that discovery aspect. I like solving the puzzles. I like time loops, right? Like, I fucking love the Forgotten City. All these things are in Outer Wilds, and I just need to push through it. I think streaming might be
able to do it. There are moments that are genuinely jaw-dropping in that game. Like, and things that you will be like, I cannot believe humans came up with this. It's like, and no one else has tried to do something this cool since. It's 100% worth pushing through.
Yeah. What's your read? I'm not somebody who has played through Kentucky Route Zero, and I've not been super aware of it. Like, I've heard the title to Kentucky Route Zero thrown around a lot. I know people like it. Are you somebody who's aware or has played through Kentucky Route Zero?
I played the first episode when it originally came out, and I remember being really into the vibe of it, and then thinking, I'm just going to wait until the entire thing is out. So I recently actually purchased and downloaded, I think it's the TV edition. I think that's what they called it. I have not finished the entire thing. I feel like it's got a fascinating vibe to it, and like an intriguing story and world that I definitely am going to play it. But it's also like available on, I think it's on Game Pass, maybe. So
it was on Game Pass at least at some point. It might still be. What does or did you get to check out the Moreau's Tale of Graveyard Clem? The one with the mech.
The mechs, right? Yeah. I that looks pretty cool. I'm into that. It looks interesting. Doesn't it have some sort of weird gameplay hook, like microtransactions or something like that? No, there was something weird that I saw, like people were getting really freaked out about, like it's free to play or some weird thing like that. But I thought it looked cool. It looked awesome to me. I don't quote me on that. I just saw a bunch of people moaning about it on Twitter, but then people are moaning about everything on Twitter, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean that is Twitter, but also, yeah, I think this game looks cool. I want to learn more about it because I've not researched it or looked into it at all aside from seeing the trailer. But off of seeing the trailer, I'm like, yo, this game looks dope as hell. Like, give me I just love the idea of these two very distinct styles being pulled together. It's almost Thirsty Suitors in a way, where Thirsty Suitors is like five different genres. But yeah, having it be this old West style, like it starts off, has a really interesting art style, but then all of a sudden you're in a mech. I'm like, oh, let's fucking go. That sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited to check it out. Oh, I did for a second think it was a Borderlands game, and I was like, oh no.
For a second, I thought it was another trailer for Junker Queen from Overwatch. I was like, oh shit, where is this? Oh. I was like, oh, this is a different thing. But speaking of Thirsty Suitors real quick, you check out the demo? You gonna check out the demo?
I am gonna check out the I am currently thinking I'll check out the demo, but when it comes time, I might not pull the trigger because I just want to play the full thing. I hate it when I play a game and I like it in a demo form, and I'm like, ugh. I guess I'll just wait then, shall I? Like a chump.
Dude, that's me. That's me with both Saints Row and Cult of the Lamb, where Cult of the Lamb, I played the hell out of that demo. Like, got my cult going, got my, like, my cultists love me. I'm preaching the word of evil God. I'm doing all the damn good things. All of a sudden, my demo ends, and I'm like, oh, I guess I just got to wait for this game to come out now, even though I had a flow going. And Saints Row was a similar thing, where, like, I played 4 hours of that game. And that was when I went down to Vegas, so I played it on site. I'm not going to get to keep that save. And I was kind of attached to what I was doing in that save. And so now I'm like, ah, shit, I'm going to have to start this game over again. Do I want to play the first 4 hours of this game again? Yeah, because I want to get to the new stuff. But also, this kind of sucks. Got to sit and wait on it.
Oh, wait. So I will. I'll see. I'll see how I feel.
Cool. For now, let's hop into story number 4. But before we do, I want to let people out there know about patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can go and get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
Are people still trying to make plans with you this summer as if you aren't booked and busy already? You're just going to have to tell them to try again in the fall. You've got pool days, pride parades, bachelor parties, and beach vacations waiting for you, because when you're living your best life, the last thing you want to worry about is butt sweat. I'm Greg Miller, and my butt never sweats because I wear MeUndies. You've heard it a million times. I like MeUndies so much. With my first pair, I bought a whole bunch more and threw away the rest of my underwear. They're the best. MeUndies has the lightest, most breathable fabrics to keep you cool and comfortable wherever you go. From undies to bras, to socks, to loungewear, to swimwear, you can find something for all your plans. MeUndies also releases new prints all the time, like their limited edition Pride collection. Find your ultimate summer comfort in sizes extra small to 4XL. MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off. For a limited time, if you sign up for their free-to-join MeUndies membership, you get 25% off your first membership item. To get 15% off your first order, 25% off your first membership item, and 100% satisfaction guaranteed, go to MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. That's MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. No one likes waiting on a paycheck, especially when you've got bills due. Good thing there's Chime. Now you can get your paycheck up to 2 days earlier with direct deposit. That's up to 2 more days to save, pay bills, and generally just feel good about your money situation. But Chime is about more than just getting paid early. It's also an award-winning mobile app, checking account, debit card, and optional savings account. So what are you waiting for? Hopefully not your paycheck. Get started with Chime today. Applying for a free account takes less than 2 minutes. Get started at chime.com/kfgames. That's chime.com/kfgames. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank or Stride Bank NA. Members FDIC. Early access to direct deposit funds depends on your pay.
Tam, let's talk about story number 4. Fired Ubisoft director Ashraf Ismail is now working for Tencent. This is James Batchelor at gamesindustry.biz. Ashraf Ismail, the Assassin's Creed director, creative director, previously fired from Ubisoft Montreal following an investigation into misconduct, has resurfaced at Tencent. Axios reported he is now serving as a consulting creative director for the Tencent-owned Timi Studios Group, with them vouching for Ismail as he seeks a second chance. Quote, during our work with Ash, he has carried himself in a professional manner and has consistently shown an eagerness to learn and grow as both a team member and a person, a Timi spokesperson told Axios. Quote, we strive to provide a safe, respectful working environment for all and will continue to do so as our team grows and expands, end quote. Tencent opened a Montreal studio in July 2021, hiring several ex-Ubisoft staff who worked with Ismail on previous Assassin's Creed titles. One source told Axios he has been involved since the studio opened. Ismail was one of the few named individuals implicated in the wave of allegations around toxic culture and abuse at Ubisoft in the summer of 2020. At the time, he was creative director on Assassin's Creed Valhalla, but left the project in June after accusations of marital infidelity and abuse of power. Ubisoft later told staff that following an investigation by an external firm, his employment had been terminated. Tam, the games industry keeps games industrying, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's
it's such a weird situation. Like, obviously, this happens a lot, and this is one of those situations where what happens a lot is people, you know, will be exposed for certain indecent behavior and abusive or harassment, whatever it may be, like misuse of power, and they vanish for a while and reappear somewhere else. And it's commonplace, like in this, and it's such a weird situation that it keeps happening in games. And what for me is like sticking out is like, okay, you know, people at Tencent are like, you know, he's conducted himself well, etc., etc. What about the people who were impacted by his actions, or the actions of anyone impacted by people at Ubisoft, you know, that were implicated in this stuff? How are they doing? Are they fine? Because I don't hear anything about them. Like, they're not able to carry on. Are they able to carry on with their lives as if nothing happened, and in many ways succeed? Like, I don't really know what to do with that information, but my brain just constantly goes to, okay, games industry, carry on, games industry, people, corporations come along and they need to make money and they really don't care too much about what goes into that. But like, for me, the important thing is like, what about the people who are impacted by the actions of folks that are failing upwards in this, in the industry? Are they okay? Like, are they taken care of? How has their life been? Has their life been improved? Because you can be damn sure that their lives were irreparably impacted, and many probably are still dealing with the actions of some of these people. What is being done to ensure they're okay? You know, and also what's being put in place to ensure this doesn't happen again?
You know? That's my big thing is, you know, part of why he was dismissed from Ubisoft was an abuse of power, right? Like, he was using his position in ways that you shouldn't use your position. And that being the case, right, him being hired onto Tencent as somebody who is higher up in a studio worries me, just from a, hey, this guy wasn't a great leader before, right? Like, he might be a great writer, he might have skills that can be useful, but to put him in another leadership position, that's the thing that really worries me, because he abused that power before. Stories like this are always tough, just because, you know, I think to some extent we all believe in rehabilitation and people being able to be given the chance to come back and do good or come back and do work again. But I think for me it is, okay, how close of an eye are you keeping on this guy? Is it right to have him in this position? Is it right to be giving him this amount of power over a studio? That is the thing that worries me mainly. But
yeah. And the important, the other thing to consider is, I mean, not that I'm absolving Tencent of this, but Ubisoft was a place where this ran rampant at various levels around various studios. And the implication, not implication, but you read between the line there, is there's a failing of HR and senior executive to protect the people that were working at the studio from people who would use their power and abuse it. That kind of like, if that issue persists in other places, like, you need to make sure that Tencent as a company, if they're doing something like this, they need to be bulletproof and to ensure that there's not an opportunity for this kind of culture to reemerge once again, wherever these kind of people are going. I'm not, similar to what you're saying, like, I'm not saying it's impossible for people to be rehabilitated, but it is, like, it's hard to say whether a person can do that. What we can say for sure is a corporation can damn sure make sure that there are systems and checks and balances in place to ensure that no one person is able to abuse their power, you know? And that is something, if you take care of and tick the box on and ensure that you're doing, you can limit the damage done by people who, you know, are incapable of changing in the worst case scenario.
Exactly. Story number 5, Bugs Bunny will be nerfed in an upcoming Multiverses update. This comes from Tom Ivan at VGC. Player First Games has confirmed plans to nerf Bugs Bunny.
What an excellent pivot from Blessing there.
I know.
I just want to call out that professional, outstanding pivot from Blessing there.
Hey man, I've been doing this long enough, you know? I gotta go from talking about abuse allegations to talking about how Bugs the motherfucking Bunny has been nerfed. I got you, alright? I can do this, man. I've learned from Greg Miller. This comes from, jumping back into the story. While not providing specific details on the planned changes, Multiverse's game director, Tony Nguyen, has said the studio is planning to dial back Bugs Bunny's ability. Sorry, that's a funny sentence. Dial back Bugs Bunny's abilities after EVO 2022. Which will take place from August 5th through August 7th. Quote, nerfs incorporate after EVO, but Bugs Bunny will always be fun, he tweeted. Hell yeah.
This is just a bizarre story top to bottom.
I know. This is honestly one of the ones where I didn't need to include the story. Like, no, I don't know if people really care.
I'm glad you did, though, because...
I just love the headline so much.
Are you playing Multiverses? Firstly, I'm still mad that they didn't call it Super Warner Brothers Ultimate. But, like, are you Are you still playing this game?
No, like, I started playing it during the previous beta that they held, the closed one, and mm-hmm. I was not feeling it. I didn't like how it felt to move the characters. I think that has a lot of good ideas, especially in terms of, like, the different equipable stuff that they have going on. And also, like, the amount of fan service-y stuff, right? The voice lines, the different stages. They're putting in the work that they need to. I didn't like how it felt. I do want to give it another chance, though, because... that was an earlier beta, and maybe they have tweaked it since then. And so I think I will pick it up again. but I don't have the agency to like want to get super into it as of now. Like I'm looking forward to games like Rumbleverse and others to give me that like party game slash competitive game experience at the moment. But I can see if I pick it up and it feels right, or like the new characters that they've added feel right, I can see myself getting into it. Like if I like LeBron, for example, who they've added into the game.
LeBron is wild. I've watched some people play as LeBron, and one of his moves is that picture, you know, that classic thing where he's like,
yeah,
like that's one of his moves. But you can also use like his basketball to actually like really limit movement of other players and other characters. Which is quite fun, it looks like. He looks annoying as hell.
Yeah, I saw some gameplay of him, and it was, him throwing the ball all around the screen and using that to kind of manage the space. I love the creativity in that. I think that is such a good idea. I think it is a bit weird that LeBron's in the game, but I choose to embrace it, you know? Like, it's goofy as hell, it's dumb as hell, but why not? You know, like, have him and Arya Stark fight along with Bugs Bunny, along with Shaggy as a god.
Yeah.
Cool, why not? Video games are can be dumb, so
yeah. I refuse to recommend that game until they put Simon Phoenix from Demolition Man in that game, or John Spartan. It's a WB owned property, get on it. Everyone tweet at WB and Multiverses, put Demolition Man characters in Multiverses. Thank you.
I want who do I want in the game? I want John Cena's Peacemaker. I think John Cena's Peacemaker would be really fun, especially with the gun mechanics. I think that would be really fun. Also, the voice lines.
Yeah, and he could use Eagly as well the entire time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, that'd be tight as hell. Honestly, Warner Brothers, like, sky's the limit right now. In fact, you can blow beyond the sky right now as Warner Brothers.
Imagine if they did John Cena, but it was like Pokemon Trainer, where he's in the background and you actually play as Eagly as like a flight character. That would be cool.
Dope as hell. Where I thought you were going was you play as John Cena, but when you press a button and you turn into different John Cena characters. Like if you appear as just regular John Cena, you can't see me, but you press down B and then all of a sudden you are Peacemaker. And you press down B again, wasn't he in a romantic comedy recently? Or am I thinking of Peacemaker?
I mean, he has kind been in romantic comedies, yeah.
Kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Let me know more of John Cena's roles. I can pitch this. Somebody said Neo from The Matrix.
That would be pretty good, yeah.
That would be pretty dope. Somebody said Animaniacs. I would love
The Animaniacs. Wait, who owns the Gargoyles? I think that's WB.
That's a good question.
Because, like, get the Gargoyles in there. That would be sick.
Are the Fast movies, are those WB? You are saying Disney owns Gargoyles, which makes sense.
Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah, they're Disney. Yeah, good point.
If Disney owns Fast, then I do want Dom Toretto. In a car the whole time. I don't want him to step out of the car.
Warner.
Yeah, I do need him to be in a car the whole time.
Someone should put fucking Tony Soprano in there.
I honestly, now that we're talking through it, I can't wait to see where Multiverses goes.
Tony Soprano and all his ducks. His little ducks. Get him in there.
Christ. Let's hop into the next news story. Story number 6. MGM loses the rights to Tomb Raider and Alicia... Vikander, I hope I pronounced that right, Vikander, is out as Lara Croft. This is Ryan Leston at IGN.
What a shame. How will we ever recover from this?
Did you watch the Tomb Raider? I never watched the Tomb Raider movies.
You know what? There's been zero good Tomb Raider movies.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Tomb Raider star Alicia Vikander it will no longer be Lara Croft.
What is happening to you?
I don't know, man. It's one of those days. I mean, me and Kevin did trivia yesterday, and we lost, and it's still getting to me that we lost. We got so close.
It's Alicia Vikander.
Vikander, thank you.
It's Lara and Croft.
Wait, what did I say? Did I say Lara Croft?
Yeah.
That's a different character. She'll no longer be Lara Croft after MGM lost the rights to the franchise. According to The Wrap, the rights for the Tomb Raider film franchise have lapsed after MGM failed to greenlight a Tomb Raider sequel in time. And that means the franchise is now up for grabs. MGM had until May this year to put a Tomb Raider sequel into production, but has now lost the rights after failing to do so. This has sparked a bidding war in Hollywood, with a host of studios now putting in bids for the popular video game franchise. The next film, it seems, will be a complete reboot of the franchise without Alicia Vikander, who starred as Lara Croft in the last movie reboot of this series. Tim, what do you want them to do with the Tomb Raider movie series?
Before we carry on, the actual first Alicia Vikander one is actually pretty decent. Like, it's serviceable. It's not too bad. No, it's not too bad. It's a fun watch. Like, a couple of hours, fine. I think they need to lean into, like, the survivor Lara stuff that they've been doing with the games a bit more. I feel like they could do one of those, like, really gritty style. She's out there, she's in the wild, she's just trying to survive, kind of like stick close to the actual narrative of the first game. I think you can get pretty far with that.
When you say the first game, you mean like the first reboot or the original PS1 first game?
The reboot, which they kind of did with the Vikander one, but I feel like there wasn't as much like real grittiness to it. I feel like, you know, in the game we were like, oh no, she's being pummeled by boulders for some reason. How will she survive?
Why was that game so violent?
That game is one of the most violent games I've ever played. It's like
NetherRealm made it. Yeah, like, you're still like, dies. It's like, why?
Are you like, oh, there's a nice little downward slope. This is going to be a nice little scene where I, you know, move Lara along and jump over some little objectives and it'll be fine. And then you just start sliding and it's like, fuck, spikes in your face, inhaled through your neck. How do you like that? Get some of that in there.
Oh, you want that in the movie? You want the violence?
Yeah, let's get the violence in there.
Make it rated R. Oh goddamn! Yeah. I honestly don't know if I personally don't need a Tomb Raider movie. I know people out there seem to dig them fine. They keep putting them out for some reason. I like the Tomb Raider games. I have never once have even like considered the idea of going out and seeing the movies. I don't. I like the stories of those games, but they're not like, you know, my favorite stories ever or anything like that.
Here's my pitch. It's a mixture of modern day Tomb Raider and old school Tomb Raider, where Lara is trying to take down some sort of military operation and discovers, you know, get some sort of special, you know, artifact. But at the same time, a little while ago, she pissed off a tiger and that tiger is hunting her the entire time. So it's like Mr. X from Resident Evil 2. So she's looking at mercenaries and behind her, there's like a tiger trying to be like, remember me? You fucking shot me that one time with your two guns and ended a backflip.
It's like Leonardo DiCaprio with that bear in the red.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Somebody mentioned a Tomb Raider TV show. And honestly, that interests me more than a movie. I feel like having like a season of like character development for that character and it being a show that is about, oh yeah, I am off, you know, I'm off on an adventure, right? Like finding different tombs, or each episode is like a fucking, I don't know, a different tomb. It is literally Tomb Raider. I think something like that could be interesting, especially as a contrast to the Uncharted movie. Cause like, you know, even the Uncharted movie, I didn't need, you know, I wasn't asking for that, but I had a fun time with that. I think having a Tomb Raider show could help contrast that a little bit.
Here's the pitch for a Tomb Raider show, okay? Mm-hmm. It's an MTV Cribs, not MTV Cribs, an MTV-style reality TV show like Survivor, you know, the one where they're on the island.
Yes.
Everyone is just a member of the public, except they introduce Lara Croft and she's a fully written character and she's just doing weird Lara Croft shit while everyone else is just trying to survive and have sex. But she's doing Lara Croft shit, and also that tiger is back.
The tiger! I don't know if we can do the tiger if it's a reality show on an island.
No, this is how you do it. Trust me. Trust now, me, HBO. That's what you want.
Do the other contestants know that Lara Croft?
No.
They're like,
she's a
badass.
She's like, my name is Lara, and they're like, oh, cool. What do you do, Lara? And she's like, you know, I am an archaeologist, and then that's it. But what they don't know, she is Lara Croft. She's trying to take down a mercenary operation, and there's a fucking tiger on her ass.
I love the idea that you get to the season finale and they see her die just in the most brutal way, and it fucks them up. Right? Like, yeah. she gets like, she gets run over by a boulder and then impaled, and the tiger finally catches up to her and rips her apart. And they're watching this happen, and they're like, fuck, that shit is real on this island.
I love the idea of when it cuts to a confessional and someone on the island, not barely dressed, is like, Lara's really weird. She seems pretty nice, but also this fucking old ass butler that follows her literally everywhere. We don't know how you got here and what is this deal?
Hell yeah. You know what, man? People are bidding for this Tomb Raider reboot. Put me and Tam in the game.
Let's go.
All right, we got ideas. We got a hit for you, all right? A24, give it to us. We got you. For now. Let's hop into story number 7. The Ascent is teasing some DLC. This comes directly from their Twitter. And Kevin, I have their Twitter linked in the thing if you want to pull up the video. They tweeted out this morning, "It's our first year anniversary. We're humbled by the support and love we've had since launch. Thank you to our awesome community for sticking with us and for playing our game. We appreciate each and every one of you. Now, with that being said, we'll just leave this here, ... And then they leave a video. Kevin, if you can press play on that. You see a ship flying, gear up for an all-new contract.
You love to see it.
Some people walk in. It's all cyberpunky because it's The Ascent. If you don't remember The Ascent, it was the top-down shooter that Paris was hyping up. Cool. I think that's it. That's the whole video. Tam, did you play The Ascent?
No, I did not.
I didn't either. I don't know.
That's the end of that conversation.
That's the end of that conversation. But I'm sure the upset fans look at this and they're like, oh, fuck yeah, we got DLC. Go ahead and jump on that. Last news story for you. Story number 8. We got a cool Steam Deck update for you. This comes from the Steam Deck Twitter, where they tweeted out, "Great news. Everyone who currently has a reservation can get their Steam Deck by the end of this year. We've cleared up supply chain issues. A bunch of folks got moved up to Q3, and all other reservations are now Q4. So if you're in line for a Steam Deck, get hyped, you're going to get it before the end of 2022. Let me tell you, it'll change your life.
Worth it. It's worth it.
This guy right here, oh my God, it's changed everything. Do you have a Steam Deck, Tim?
Oh, yeah. It's changed my life. You can play AAA games while taking a shit on the toilet. It's unbelievable.
It's incredible. It's incredible. Like, if you're in a mood where you just don't want to leave your bed for 5 days straight, like that, like what happens to some of us sometimes, you can play the entirety of Death Stranding. Let me tell you, it's a great time. Yeah. Isn't that right, Barrett?
It is. Tam, have you played any of the Batman games while taking a poop?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I had it pre-release, and let me tell you, the first thing I did was take Arkham's Shitty for a spin. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, Arkham Shitty is really great. People are telling me that I need to clean my screen. It's a touchscreen, all right? Like, it's gonna have smudges because I be touching this shit. I have to scroll through menus.
I be touching this shit.
I be touching this shit.
It's
all
funny because
right?
You're not touching it right there. Yeah. You were floating over it.
Yeah, my hands are a little bit sweaty. I don't want to
I hate using the touch screen. Like, it just because I know it's gonna get smudgy and stuff like that. It really freaks me out.
Yeah, stop telling people. I do this with my Switch too, where I show it to the screen. People are like, why is it all smudgy? Why clean up your screen? It's like, these are touchscreen devices. What do you want from me? They're meant to be touched
right before you pull it up to just wipe it down with your sleeve just for a second.
Stella in the chat from IGN says, imagine having sweaty hands. I know. Embarrassing.
That's not fair. I've got sweaty
hands. Yeah, I also have sweaty hands.
Like, why am I catching strays right now?
Stella's referencing the time where we played Phasmophobia. And I was freaked out, and my hands were just drenched in sweat the entire time. And I showed them a picture of my keyboard. Keyboard was soaked, man.
Oh,
I get real when I get scared. I get
Steam Deck is gross.
Bless him.
Well, first of all,
He's turned on you.
Yeah, I thought you were on my side. Is that better?
Never.
Is that better?
Oh my God!
Oh, I can see myself. I could. That is so clean. I can see my face in it.
There you go. You're welcome. For now.
Let's keep it. Let's go. We gotta wrap this show up. I gotta go.
Oh yeah, we got 2 minutes. Oh, we can wrap this up. I got you 2 minutes down.
Let's go.
Tam, I'm very excited for everybody to get all their Steam Decks delivered to their front doors, but that is so far away. If I want to know what's going on to mom grab shops today, where'd I look?
The official list of the upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Host Show Host every weekday.
Do 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 yeah. Out today we got Digimon Survive for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Xenoblade Chronicles 3 for Switch. Gilco Arcade 2 for Evercade. Jalico Arcade 1 for Evercade. Kiwi Clicker for PC. Rimworld for PS4, Xbox One. Squish for Switch. Avenging Spirit for PS4, PS5, Switch, Xbox One, Xbox Series X, and Turrican Anthology Volume 1 for Switch. New dates for you. Minecraft's Steve Amiibo will finally reach store shelves on September 9th. And then Yars Recharged is coming to PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X, nice. Switch, Atari VCS, Stadia, and PC via Steam in the Epic Game Store August 24th. We got one deal of the day for you. Doom Eternal is $14.99 right now on the Switch eShop. So if you're one of them Switch kids, but you want to dance with the devil, go pick up Doom Eternal right now, $14.99.
With your greasy screens.
Sure, greasy ass hands on those greasy screens that are all smudged. Now it's time for YouTube.com. Not YouTube.com. Now it's time for KindaFunny.com. It's Friday. .com/you're wrong. Rewrite in. Let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong. So we can correct it for those watching later on YouTube, listening later on podcast services around the globe. Toby Blue says LMI is actually pronounced LMA. LMA.
Oh, okay. My bad. I'm sorry.
Mr. Hawks 182 says John Cena was in the rom-com Trainwreck with Amy Schumer back in 2015. That was the exact one I was thinking of. He also played Jacob or Jakob. I'll say Jacob in Fast 9, Agent Burns in Bumblebee, and is currently recording his voice for Wile E. Coyote, the movie.
What?
Oh.
That sounds made up.
That sounds like a lie.
That sounds like a ad lib where you just wrote things in. A Wile E. Coyote movie featuring John Cena.
Wile E. Coyote, that sample from cartoons and cereal stuck in my head.
Yeah. Wire, there you go. Yeah. If you're watching this live on Twitch, after this is Mike, Nick, and Andy playing some Escape Academy. If you want to catch that stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Next week's hosts for Kind of Funny Games Daily go like this. You're getting Greg and Tim on Monday, Greg and me on Tuesday, me and Greg on Wednesday, me and Tim on Thursday, then Tim and me on Friday. Remember this. Has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.